Americans will soon receive help from the government. How much and when? Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. It's a $2.2 trillion stimulus package. It's the life preserver that the government is throwing to taxpayers and companies, large and small. We're joined by Democratic Representative Ted Deutch to get answers on when your check should arrive, but also how Congress is preparing for the long haul. Share your questions now on Twitter or Facebook at WLRN Sundial. Also, the cruise industry won't get any of that stimulus money, but they are hurting, and they are a large part of the South Florida economy. We'll look at the industry and learn if these companies are doing enough to protect passengers and employees. Finally,
I see the cats congregating in the street, waiting to get fed. Wave to my 70-something-year-old neighbor who's self-isolating.
A story from one of our reporters about self-isolation. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, just a few days ago, Congress passed a historic $2.2 trillion federal stimulus package in response to the unprecedented global coronavirus pandemic. It includes hundreds of billions of dollars for small businesses, even more for the large corporations hit the hardest by the crisis, and a $1,200 check in the mail for anyone making below $75,000 a year. Now, to give you a sense of how fast this pandemic is spreading, Congress is already talking about another spending package. Democratic Congressman Ted Deutch from Broward County joins us to discuss the package, the critical issues facing South Floridians, and to answer your questions. Congressman Deutch, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And I just want to mention the number is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. And again, share your questions with a congressman. Well, let's start with this. I mean, personally, you're currently under quarantine, self-quarantine, because your son had returned from Spain. And to be clear, neither of you are symptomatic of the virus, but this is entirely out of precaution, right?
Well, my son came back from Spain where there were lots of cases at the time, and he was around people who tested positive. And he actually developed this bizarre symptom, which I think it's important for people to know about since we're hearing more and more of it, which is the loss of your sense of taste and smell. So that's actually when the doctor said, you should assume that he's positive, but because we're not doing enough testing in Florida and it's so difficult to get tests since he didn't have any other symptoms, we couldn't get him tested. So we were advised to self-quarantine. He's been at a distance. The 14 days actually just expired. So we're doing okay. Our real concern obviously is for people who are really struggling through this, and whether they're sick or the frontline workers, the doctors and the nurses, we're doing okay.
Yeah, well, but also I wanted to know about your peers in Congress. You know, how many of them are self-quarantining and how many of them have been tested?
Well, I don't know how many have been tested. There were, I know at least a dozen who are self-quarantining. We now have, my friend Mario Diaz-Balart, a neighbor down here in South Florida, tested positive. I've been touching base with him. Fortunately, he's doing better. A colleague from Utah, there are two other members who had tested positive. There's a member in New York who is presumed to be positive. She's now in quarantine. And look, Congress is like the rest of the country. This is spreading really, really quickly. And we all need to do our part to try to social distance and really prevent this from spreading so that our doctors and healthcare workers and hospitals can treat people without being totally overwhelmed.
There's a lot to cover, so let's go ahead and jump into this stimulus package. $2.2 trillion passed by both the House and Senate. President signs it. Initially faced some resistance, though, from Democrats in Congress, feeling that it was a little bit favorable to corporations. But what were your initial concerns with it, and what was finally done that you were satisfied?
Sure. And there were some concerns with the initial draft in the Senate, but this was a negotiation, and ultimately, at a time when obviously the virus is striking across the country, it doesn't really matter what your politics are, everyone is at risk. Congress was able to come together in overwhelming fashion and pass this piece of legislation unanimously in the House and Senate. And ultimately, I felt comfortable supporting it because it puts individuals and families first. Most important in this legislation is getting money out into the hands of people when so many people have been impacted economically. So many people have lost their jobs. That's what the direct payment does. I thought and urged and fought for more than a one-time payment. I didn't think this was enough, but it's important for us to get this done. It's a $1,200 payment right now. Couples making less than $150,000 will receive $2,400. Then there's an extra $500 per child, and those phase out the higher the income. But that's a really important thing to help people right now. We're pushing to get these out. The Treasury Department Secretary Mnuchin says within 3 weeks, he thinks maybe 2 weeks. We want people to be able to have access to this electronically through direct deposit, since we don't want people to leave their homes and have to worry about cashing checks. That's one piece. The other thing, just a couple of other things, we fought really hard to increase unemployment compensation.
Yes.
There's $600 more per week for 4 months and an additional 13 weeks of benefits. That's going to help everyone. And I personally worked really hard on a provision with a Republican colleague in the Senate to make those available to independent contractors, to gig workers, Uber drivers, people who work on their own. So that's a huge piece. And then finally, there's a massive investment in our healthcare providers and our state and local governments who are also really in their own ways facing these challenges head on. We want to make sure they have the resources to do their work.
Again, talking with Congressman Ted Deutsch of Florida's 22nd District, and we want to hear from you, your questions about the stimulus package. We're also going to be talking about what Florida's response should be to COVID-19, what you think that should be. Give us a call, 800-743-9576. And that's 800-743-WLRN, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We did get a tweet from Ozzy asking a question, Congressman. If I have a child that was born October of 2019, haven't filed for their 2019 taxes, will they be eligible for that stimulus check? This goes to the family's issue.
The dependent should be eligible for $500. I also know that if that child has a social security number or not. That's actually a really good question for kids who have been born that recently. The $500, as I said, goes to dependents. We'll go ahead. This gives me an opportunity to tout our resources on our website at deutsch.house.gov. We'll go ahead and confirm that and get that answered, posted on our website. And any other questions that come up, that I want to make sure we give people absolutely correct information.
And if anybody is filing their taxes right now at this point, you may find out very quickly. I want to go to the...
Well, I also, just if I can, that was something that we did before the act passed. We pressed, and I pressed the White House to extend the date to file taxes.
Right.
Originally, file taxes and make payments. That's now been extended until July 15th.
Right.
And that's going to help a lot of people now. Also, if people think they're going to be getting refunds, obviously you can file now. We encourage people to file to get those refunds too.
Let me go to the phones. I want to go to James in Fort Lauderdale. James, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. And thanks so much for your efforts, Congressman, and all the work that you've done with this. I was calling specifically, I know you mentioned independent contractors, 1099 mm-hmm. workers, of which I am one. For those of us who've never been able to access unemployment benefits, I just wanted to, you did verify that, and I'm glad to hear that. But I wanted to ask, what is the best way then to access those unemployment benefits? And then the other thing I wanted to know is, is there been any language in the bill whatsoever, any talk about, since the banks are going to be receiving so much money as a part of the stimulus, is there any talk about suspending mortgage payments or rent payments or utility payments? Thank you so much for your
Yeah.
James, thanks for the call. Let's start with, again, he's an independent contractor.
Sure. So independent contractors, and it's an important question because, as he points out, unemployment wasn't typically available. It will be, and it'll be available through the Florida Department of Economic Opportunity. It's floridajobs.org. This is whether it's the unemployment benefits or all of the money that's going to be made available to small businesses through the Small Business Administration, which is another thing that we fought for. In both cases, it's a lot that's happening right now. So we're working to make sure we've pressed the administration to get more people with the Small Business Administration to get loans out. And the state needs to really beef up their resources at the reemployment office in Tallahassee. They're doing it. It might take just a little bit of time. We've gotten lots of phone calls from people who have been frustrated because it's so hard to get through now, given everyone's interest in this. But over the next week, we hope that that'll smooth out. But it can be done at the state level.
And he also talked about, you know, with homeowners and renters. I mean, we've discussed this as well. It's just that there have been people who have pushed for the idea of putting a moratorium on basically having to pay your mortgage or rent to give everybody the opportunity to stay solvent in these times.
And if there is, under the act, if you've got a federally backed mortgage, then there's 6 months of forbearance. They can't foreclose during that 6 month period. I've encouraged people to follow up directly with their lenders on this, just to make sure that their lender is aware. Some private lenders are working to strike other deals, recognizing how challenging the times are for everyone. So we're working, we've got this 6 months in that people can't be foreclosed on. Same thing applies for people who are worried about eviction. In Florida, the state has acted to ensure that no one can be evicted over the next 60 days or so.
And there's more housing for people. And that's an interesting point. Talk about, let's look at landlords, though, because, I mean, they'll have multiple properties, and they've got a lot of responsibility beyond just the mortgage of that property, is also the insurance and everything else. And you know, what are we saying? What does this stimulus do for them in helping their tenants?
It's such an important question. And this is a point that we keep making. It's not just a question of specific language of the bill. It's the realization that we're all in this together. And in this legislation, landlords will have access to these small business loans. So we're particularly working hard to make sure that since they're going to be able to participate in this, they're going to get benefit from it, that they work with their own tenants right now who haven't received their checks yet or haven't gotten that extended unemployment yet, and give them the opportunity to extend out, work with them as well. And we're getting positive responses, but I really encourage people to reach out to their landlords on this too, just like I encourage them to reach out to their banks, auto loans as well, credit card companies. The benefits under this bill will provide opportunity for businesses and individuals. We should all be working together.
So basically, I mean, we're saying to people, you know, reach out to all of your debtors and you try to work things out with them, you know, in these times. That's basically it.
To your banks, to your lenders, and also pointing out that under the legislation, they understand that they're not going to be foreclosed upon and they're not going to be evicted. The state can do more to make sure that no utilities get cut off anywhere in the state. But they should point that out. But at the same time, they can try to also make arrangements.
Okay.
Some, as I said, some of the private lenders I know have offered to make concessions. That's why I encourage people to reach out to them, because as I said, we're all in this together. We ought to be working together.
Let's go back to the phones. I want to go to Barry, who's living in Davie. Barry, welcome to the program.
Thank
Thank you. Thank you very much. Congressman Deutsch, first of all, thank you very much for your service. We all appreciate
that. Thank you. Thanks.
I have a quick question. My partner, Mary Beth, is receiving unemployment at the moment. I believe it's a little over $100 a week. And she was curious whether or not the extra $600, if she will qualify for that. Is there... That's the main question.
Yeah,
we're both actors and professional actors, and there's literally no
there's no work.
There's no theater. There's no theater in South Florida. Right.
So she was already on unemployment. Is that what you're saying, Barry? And you're wondering if she qualifies? Okay, Congressman.
Yes. Sure. That's a really important question, and thanks for your kind words. I want to thank you and your wife and let you know how much we all look forward to the day when we can get back out to the theater and enjoy your good work. And we were particularly thinking of artists and creators and people in the music industry, all kinds of folks who can't benefit typically. So the $600 per week is in addition to the state unemployment, and that's for the next 4 months. And then there's also a 13-week extension, of benefits, even if you've already exhausted current state unemployment benefits. Right. So those are two really important provisions in this.
Barry, thank you so much for the call. Again, talking with Congressman Ted Deutsch from Broward. If you've got a question about the stimulus package, about the money that's coming, we're going to talk here in just a moment about what should Florida be doing? Are we doing enough to, slow the spread of COVID-19, give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. We're going to take just a quick break, come back, and take more of your calls with the congressman here on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Let's return to our conversation with Congressman Ted Deutsch. And we want to hear again from you if you have a question for the congressman. Let's talk a little bit more. I mean, you have a question about the stimulus package. You can definitely ask it. But we want to talk a little bit about this idea of maybe should Florida fully shelter in place? Do we have to do this in order to slow the spread of COVID-19? We'd like to hear your thoughts. If you can't get through, you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We have been hearing from some of you on email. Allison Dankner sent us this and asking, as a tutor and coach of parents and kids, I'm self-employed. Will I get a check? What about Allison, Congressman?
Yes, Allison will receive a direct payment. And again, as we've been talking about, and what's so critical, especially for so many people down here in South Florida, independent contractors will be eligible for for unemployment as well. That $600 a week will also be available.
And another question briefly on retirees collecting Social Security, are they eligible?
Retirees collecting Social Security will be eligible as long as the income, the income falls within the limits in the bill.
Okay. Phone calls are coming in. We'll jump to those in just a moment, but I wanted to move over and talk a little bit about Governor Ron DeSantis and the state's response to this. And I mean, you came out in sharp criticism of the governor and his response at the beginning. This was from a teleconference actually over the weekend. Let's take a listen.
If the governor could act today to require, not to encourage, not to suggest that it's a good idea, but to require Floridians to stay safe by staying at home, we would be taking an enormous step to try to push down on that curve and prevent this from causing even more death.
So, Congressman, are you asking the governor to put the entire state in a shelter-in-place order?
Yeah, absolutely, I am. And if you just look at the news that's come out over the past 24 hours, the decision by the president to extend the date that he's been working with comes from the fact that he's listening to Dr. Fauci. And Dr. Fauci is looking at these studies that suggest that in Florida we could have a bed shortage in our intensive care units by the spring, and that by the summer we could have close to 7,000 deaths in our state. And that's why it's so important for us to do everything that we can to prevent people to prevent this from getting worse. We don't have any idea how many cases are in the state, and everyone who's listening right now knows that's the case because it's so hard to get tested. So why should we wait until people start showing up in emergency rooms for us to take action that, if taken today, can give our doctors and nurses a fighting chance to provide the care that's necessary to help save lives?
Well, I'm going to ask you about testing, but how about this? I mean, if we asked this, if we put that order out there, how do we enforce that? I mean, do you envision a situation like in Italy where, I mean, they're just basically walking the streets and enforcing everybody, you're going to stay inside?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the first thing that we do is we go beyond what the governor has done so far. And I appreciate that yesterday he talked about the need to take action in South Florida, but what he put out there still encourages people to stay home. It encourages them to take certain actions. It needs to be mandatory. People need to get the message that they can't leave their homes. Look, we don't have there aren't enough police officers in order to be the best use of our law enforcement to patrol every neighborhood to make sure people don't leave their homes. The governor talks about people doing the right thing. Well, if they're told that they have to stay inside and that it's for the good of themselves, their families, their neighbors, and our state, then I think it's possible for that to happen. But should law enforcement go out when there are hundreds of people, thousands of people crowding beaches, even as this thing spreads throughout the state? Sure, because those people, even if the folks on the beaches, even if they don't have any symptoms, to the extent that any of them have it and are asymptomatic, that's how this thing spreads. And then they leave and they go back and they see their parents and their grandparents, and that's what puts people at risk.
They could be carriers. Let's go to the testing issue. And yes, we've increased the amount of testing, and now we're looking at possible access to tests that are quicker than what we've been used to, because at this point we have to wait a few days to get the response. But what's been the issue with getting the testing out, and why we can't get more tests out?
Well, first, the problem was with the number of tests, and there was a limit on those. There weren't enough people who were performing the tests. Now we're opening more testing sites, and the challenge was getting the swabs that are necessary to actually start the process to conduct the tests. I give Jared Moskowitz, the director of emergency management, credit for and the governor, frankly, a credit for getting a drive-through testing site open in Palm Beach County, and we've got these testing sites run with the help of FEMA in Broward County. And I think those are really important, but they've got to have the supplies they need in order to get them out. I think finally those are coming through, but that was the challenge. But we can't. We're never going to be able to test everyone. The one thing that everyone can do, however, is try to stay home. Is to stay home, keep themselves safe, and help stop the spread.
All right. And again, coming back to this testing, and I know we also reported that West Palm Beach is just opened up a drive-through testing site, a very large one as well. You speak with folks, you know, who healthcare workers, people working in the hospitals, and, you know, we hear this from different parts of the country, but different parts of the country are experiencing this a little differently than we are. But what are you hearing from folks here as to what they need, and do they have everything they need? Again, talking about hospitals and doctors, are they ready? Do they have everything they need?
Well, there's a concern, obviously, about right at this moment, and then there's a concern about what happens in 2 weeks and 3 weeks and 6 weeks. And right now, I spoke with the state yesterday. They're pushing out protective equipment to hospitals. I've spoken with hospitals directly to make sure that they're getting what they need. There are people who are coming in and buying up the important personal protection protective gear that should be going to our hospitals. The Justice Department is now focused on that. Ashley Moody, our Attorney General, is now focused on making sure that this gets out there. Right now, they seem to be doing okay. The concern is, will there be enough hospital beds? Will they have enough masks? And ultimately, if this gets bad enough, particularly given the large number of vulnerable citizens we have, especially seniors, will there be a sufficient number of ventilators?
Right.
And that's obviously the concern that we're focused on.
All right. I want to come back to the phones just briefly here, get some calls in. I'm going to go to Sharon, who's in Coral Springs. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you.
Go ahead, Sharon.
So my question is for the people who already filed taxes, but they took out what's called a tax advance on their return, they have to get a check. So their banking information isn't on file. How do we go about getting our banking information?
That's a really important question. Obviously, for people who have done direct deposit, that information is available. For others, we've been pressing the Treasury Department as they roll this out to try to find a way for people to provide the information securely so that money can be done by direct deposit. The IRS has their own page about this. irs.gov/coronavirus. We're still hoping they find a way to do that. If not, the check will go to the address that they have on record for the taxpayer.
All right, Sharon, I hope that helps.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much for the call and for the question. I wanted to move over to, and again, we'll get to some calls here, but I wanted to move over to this one other issue we're going to be talking about later in the program. It's about the cruise industry. And look, it's a big part of the economy down here in South Florida, as you already know. The cruise industry is not going to be getting any of the stimulus dollars, but we get this problem right now. We have this ship out there, the Holland America Line, Zandam, attempting to come into Port Everglades in Broward County, probably by Wednesday. They've got sick patients. They had 4 deaths reported of coronavirus. Governor DeSantis says he doesn't want Florida to take them in. What should we do?
Yeah, this is a tough situation. I spoke to the Coast Guard this morning, and there's got to be a way to humanely deal with the people on these ships, some number of whom, and I've asked the Coast Guard for this, but some number of the people on those ships are our neighbors. I mean, they're people from South Florida who are trying to get home. And we ought to be able to do this in a way that allows people to be treated humanely, but doesn't put the rest of our community at risk. So there are lots of ideas that are out there. If the ship were to come here, everything that's done and done at the expense of the cruise line should be done with the protection of our community first and foremost. That means finding a place to quarantine the people on the ship so they don't have to bounce around at sea, but so that we know they're going to stay until they test negative, and then that there be a clear way for them to be sent, for those who don't live here, to be sent back to their communities. But there are lots of crew members who are from other countries. We don't know if those countries will even accept them back now. We've got to figure that out. If some of them require hospital care, we've got to figure out how that's going to get done.
Yeah.
We've got a few days as the ship comes from Panama. We've got a few days to figure out a way to do this. I think there is a way to do this without telling them, no, you can't dock anywhere in Florida, but that also focuses on the importance of keeping the Floridians who are here safe and stopping the spread of this.
We've been talking with Democratic Congressman Ted Deutsch, again, whose district includes parts of Broward and Palm Beach counties. Congressman, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time.
No, it's my pleasure anytime. It's really important. I'm glad you're giving people this important information. And again, I encourage people to come to our website at deutsch.house.gov and on Facebook at our Congressman Ted Deutsch page. We're doing a Facebook Live every evening, I think, at least until people get tired of it, just to provide some updated, just a short bit of updated information. And I appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
I know we got a lot of calls that came in. I just wanted to mention, because some of these are repeat calls. I know that we've had somebody asking about self-employed eligibility, and I believe the congressman said, yes, you are eligible. We also, retirees, if you're on Social Security, yes, you are also eligible for those checks as well. Again, information that we'll keep getting to you as we get it as well. And coming up shortly, we're going to be exploring the cruise industry. What questions do you have? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Well, the congressman is just one of many in South Florida in self-isolation attempting to limit the spread of COVID-19. One of our own here at WLRN knows the experience all too well. Reporter Danny Rivero last month went on a reporting trip to the Bahamas. And as he got back, docking in Port Everglades, there was news of multiple workers at the port testing positive for the virus. So out of precaution, Danny self-isolated for 2 weeks. And here's the story of his experience.
For more than a week, I've been staring at this branch from the oak tree. It's a small branch, more like a twig, with Spanish moss on it. This little branch is dangling from an electric wire a few feet outside the window where I work. This is my life now, working from home, staring at the branch with Spanish moss. It's the first time I talk about the branch, because if we're honest, there's not a whole lot of talking going on. I see the cats congregating in the street, waiting to get fed. Wave to my 70-something-year-old neighbor who's self-isolating. Yesterday, we shouted to each other from a distance. You might go camping for a while close to Lake Okeechobee and take some nature photos. Nature, it seems, hasn't read the news. The sun is still shining, a little too bright for my taste these days. I check the forecast, expecting a storm, but all I'm getting is perfect weather. Every night I still go for a jog or take a walk to the river. Under the surface, schools of fish are still congregating in groups of 10 or more. I feel slightly jealous of them. And then I grimace at the people passing by in crowded boats, partying like it's 1999 and Y2K could end life as we know it. I retreat back to my hole, where I'm slowly letting myself go. Old Hooters t-shirts and sweatpants are now proper work attire. Sometimes the sweatpants are optional. My beard is long and my neck unshaved. It's like I'm in a bizarro world version of Castaway, only I'm locked inside. A plane passes overhead every 5 minutes, less often at night. Or maybe I only notice it less because that's when I turn on the TV, put on a record. It's a slow life, this social distancing thing. I find myself doing things I never did before. I cleaned that closet. You know, that closet. I slow roast some meat and make a broth with the bones, just letting it simmer for hours and hours and hours. I read the news, which is a funny thing because I'm also writing the news from home, and I try to internalize the lessons that I myself have been repeating to the public. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. And then sometimes I convince myself that, hey, this is my house. I can't get myself sick, right? And I feel a momentary comfort in the fact that I'm at least in my own home. Then my wife comes back from her job at the hospital. The world closes in on me, and I walk myself to the bathroom once again to wash my hands. The thing about all this time alone is that while it's a lot, it's also a little. When you cook 3 meals a day, there's surprisingly a lot of dishes to clean. You end up sprawling out, using every single part of the home, and leaving little messes here and there. The chores stack up, and it ends up feeling less like a vacation from the world and more like I'm grounded for a crime I didn't commit, a crime I'm actually trying to prevent. The world's gone crazy, I tell myself. I'm not crazy. I'm just trapped in a box trying to help the crazy people from me going crazy on them. And then I glance outside the window and see the little branch with the Spanish moss, waving on the electric wire every time it catches a draft of wind. And I wonder to myself, when is it going to drop?
Yeah, And that was WLRN's reporter Danny Rivero. You could read his full story about self-quarantining on our social media at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, there are workers on cruise ships that are not getting paid and they're stranded at sea. What questions do you have about the cruise industry? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. More on that coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Cruise ships have been at the center of the coronavirus story since the pandemic started a few months ago. There was the story of the Diamond Princess off the coast of Japan with hundreds of sick passengers on board. Then there was the Grand Princess seeking to dock in San Francisco and meeting resistance from the federal government. And now there's the Holland America Line Zaandam, where four passengers have died from the virus attempting to dock in Port Everglades as early as Wednesday. Well, the cruise industry plays a critical role in South Florida's tourism economy and employs thousands of workers. Tourism and cruise lines, our Taylor Dolvin's beat at the Miami Herald. She joins us now. Taylor, always great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So give us an update on what's happening with the cruise industry in general right now, because, you know, we keep hearing about ships out at sea, not able to port. Is the industry still operating?
So the industry is still operating in that all new cruises were canceled starting March 13th. But when that cancellation happened, many cruises were midway through the cruise at that point and have been scrambling since then to try and find ports that will accept them and allow passengers off the ships. So these ships you're hearing about, like the one you mentioned, the Zaandam, which is on its way to Florida, that ship hasn't been able to find a place that will let passengers off since that day.
Yeah. So basically the industry put the restrictions on themselves, basically shutting down.
Yeah, it was sort of a negotiation with the federal government. President Trump weighed in on March 13th and thanked the companies for making that decision. On March 13th, they all agreed to cancel new cruises for at least 30 days. And yesterday, most have extended that for at least another 15 days, some another 30 days.
We're talking with the Miami Herald's Taylor Dolvin. What questions do you have about the cruise industry? Again, find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We heard from Celso on Facebook saying, if the ship is a self-supported vessel, why don't they turn them into a quarantine support, a medical kind of help that we need to quarantine people? Have you heard from companies pursuing this? Taylor, have you ever heard of anything like that?
So that's kind of like what we saw in early February in Japan. We had a cruise ship, the Diamond Princess, that was quarantined there for 2 weeks, and everyone was kept on board. And what CDC is now saying is that's not the correct way to do this. Ships are incredibly risky for infectious disease spread, and the CDC is no longer suggesting or encouraging that people be quarantined on board long term.
Let's talk about the ship you just mentioned a moment ago, the Zaandam. First of all, tell us, where was the ship, where did it start, and where was it going, and where is it right now?
So this cruise originally started in Buenos Aires, Argentina on March 8th and was supposed to arrive in Chile, and passengers were supposed to debark there, I think, around March 21st. The Chile did not allow that to happen, and the ship then set off north. And every country that the ship has passed by then, the company has said that those countries have turned the ship away. So Peru, Ecuador, Colombia. The ship finally made its way through the Panama Canal over the weekend and is now, hasn't rounded Cuba yet, but is expected to arrive to Florida shores either late tomorrow or the next day.
And I mean, it's got a number of coronavirus cases, and there were four deaths linked to COVID-19.
We don't yet know what caused those four deaths. That was a U.S. citizen and then three people from other countries. The ship does not have autopsy capabilities, so we won't know yet what they died of. But yes, the company announced today that there are now 9 people between the Zaandam ship and its sister ship, the Rotterdam ship, which actually the company transferred passengers from the Zaandam to the Rotterdam, and now both are headed to Florida. And there are 9 cases between the two.
And we've heard that Governor DeSantis doesn't want those ships to port in Florida. Does he have final say on this?
No, it's definitely seems to be a collaboration between Broward County officials who are actually meeting as we speak to discuss this with guidance from CDC. But everyone is really depending on the company here to come up with the plan. So as far as when the ship would arrive, who would get off, who would stay on, who would treat the ill, those questions are all being pointed to the company that has come up with a plan that those authorities are reviewing now.
So talking about the passengers, I want to ask you about the crews, because you've also reported on this and what happens to these crews. First, remind us, where do these crews come from? Where are they hiring most of their employees?
A lot of crew are from the Philippines. Of the ones I'm talking to, I don't have statistics on this, but a lot of them are from Indonesia, India, Eastern Europe, but mostly from the Philippines.
So there are situations where some of the crew are left on the ship. And, what do we know about their conditions and how many may have been tested or at least are showing signs, symptoms?
Yeah, so the ships you see in Port Miami are floating near the port. Those don't have passengers on them. Those only have crew. And it's important to remember, ships require crew. They can't just, it's not a sailboat that you can anchor or tie up somewhere to a buoy and leave. These ships require a certain amount of crew to run the operations. What's happening is outside of that skeleton essential crew, the rest of the crew are sort of stuck on these ships as countries crack down on travel restrictions and, are limiting movement. There are fewer flights. It's harder to find charter flights. And so companies are having a really difficult time getting these people home.
And what kind of protections do these employees have? I mean, what are the companies doing to help them, again, if in case they're showing symptoms or they may get sick?
Yeah, and more are getting sick every day. And in the worst cases, they're being medevaced to shore. So last night we saw 2 crew members from the Symphony of the Seas ship and the Oasis of the Seas ship with serious respiratory problems be medically evacuated by the Coast Guard to South Florida hospitals. And we saw another one from a Princess ship at Port Everglades be medevaced to shore today. So it seems to be that the companies are trying to treat people on these ships as best they can, but if things get too serious, they are being brought to shore. And from what I understand so far, the tests they're using on the ships are the rapid tests, not the nasal swab tests that take several days to get results back. So that's something else they're dealing with.
We're talking with Taylor Dolvin of the Miami Herald. She covers the cruise industry. And as we learned from our conversation from Congressman Ted Deutsch earlier in the program, the cruise industry is not getting any of the stimulus money approved by the president. But again, there are issues within the industry, as reported by the Miami Herald, on how these ships are handling the virus spread and how they're treating their employees, and what are they doing to protect the crew? I mean, not just the crew, but the passengers. What questions do you have about the cruise industry and how they're handling COVID-19? Find us on social media, Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. We did hear from one of our listeners who has this question.
Good morning. This is Patricia Bartleson. My husband and I live on Collins Avenue and have a nice view of the Atlantic Ocean. And we are curious about the tourist ships that we see going in and out and moving about outside. We are just wondering what the status is. Are there passengers on the ship? And if so, what are the plans for them to disembark and how will they be dealt with? Where will they go?
So, I mean, you just talked about, Taylor, how, the ships, even if they're empty of passengers, you got a lot of crew still to operate them. But she's talking about ships coming in and out. Are they coming in and out? Are they going somewhere else?
Yes. So these ships, you'll see them docked at Port Miami for several days, and then they'll leave to go out to sea at least 3 miles from shore. And that is so that they're doing several things, producing fresh water. They're changing the ballast water on the ships. They're also dumping waste, treated sewage and other waste created on board. So it's essential that they leave the port and go out to sea. And that's what people are seeing, is them come in and out of the port that way.
What is the report from the Herald on certain crew members not being paid? What was that?
Yeah, so we obtained letters that cruise companies had given to employees who are stuck on these ships awaiting flights home. That said that if they are on the ships past the date of their contract, because remember, these crew members work on contracts that are 6, 7, 8 months long, and then they get the other few months off at home. If those contracts expire while they're still stuck on board, they will stay on board, but they will not be paid anymore. And so the companies haven't answered questions about how many crew are in that position, but that's what they're being told.
If people are let off at the Port of Miami, whether it's passengers or crew, are they being screened?
So we've heard several cases of passengers and crew not being screened. I actually, I haven't heard cases of them being screened yet. The port, which is run by Miami-Dade County, says that responsibility is on the cruise companies. They need to be doing, you know, asking people about their health and temperature checks before they get off. I spoke to crew members who got off of a Norwegian cruise ship on March 23rd. After seeing several people on the ship docked at Port Miami become ill, none of them were screened, and one of them tested positive for COVID-19 the following day.
I mentioned it a couple of times, but what did Congress say about why cruise lines are not included in the stimulus package?
So cruise companies weren't explicitly mentioned in the bill, but the bill only applies to companies that are registered in the U.S. or have a majority of their employees in the U.S. and in a large U.S. presence. And so that isn't the case for these cruise companies. They're registered in other countries. Carnival is a Panamanian corporation. Royal Caribbean is a Liberian corporation. Norwegian is a Bermudan corporation. And the majority of their employees are on their ships and are not U.S. citizens.
And we got a question from Donnie on Twitter asking, do we know why cruise companies register their ships in foreign countries?
So they claim tax exemption from U.S. income tax. So I would suspect that's the reason.
So what do you think the future of this industry is going to look like? Because we don't know when, you know, we're going to be able to get back to normal business.
That is the million-dollar question. It's really hard to tell at this point. Cruise companies are still selling cruises. I received a promotion email from Norwegian Cruise Line just this morning. So I think people are still booking, you know, further out. But as far as the return here and getting back to cruising, that's really up in the air.
Taylor, how are they still selling cruises if they have shut down operations?
They've shut down operations only through mid-May and some through end of May. So they're selling cruises for, you know, after those dates or into the following years.
Very interesting. Taylor Dolvin of the Miami Herald, again covering the cruise industry. You can read her recent reporting on our social media at WLRNSundial. Taylor, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is our program for this Tuesday, March 31st. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington. Alejandro Martinez is our associate producer and social media editor. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Our news director is Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zapka, and our technical supervisor is Peter J. Meritz. And by the way, don't forget that you could download a podcast of this program. Search WLRN Sundial on your podcast app. We will be re-airing again at night at 8 o'clock. Well, coming up tomorrow on the show, teachers, principals, and parents have begun remote learning across South Florida. But what has been the experience thus far, especially for teachers and students? And parents, we're not forgetting about you. How are you doing? We've assembled a panel of teachers and reporters across our listening area, and we want to hear from you. What's been your kids' experience thus far? Find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial, or email us sundial@wlrnnews.org. You can call in during the show tomorrow, but we want to hear, how is this learning from home thing going all across the board? That's coming up on the program tomorrow. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Remember, please, let's practice our social distancing. Keep that 6 feet away from other people. Wash your hands as much as possible. Let's do everything that we can to flatten the curve and not let this get out of hand. Let's take control of it. We can beat this together. We're going to do it. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow.